Blog Talk Radio.
Alafia, welcome. Welcome to Care to Read. You got your Ominka in the house, your advisor, the one you need, and the advocate, the one you want. Thank you for joining us this evening on our segment of health education. We are family and consumer science education, which is being underwritten by Project 2019. And we'd like to thank you for allowing us to borrow your airwaves this evening and joining our room on Adventure to Care to Read. Now, as you know, we always practice the exercise of the African tradition. We look to our right and to our left and get the nod of our elders to go on with the show, giving us permission to be able to speak before elders. So I look to my right and my left, and I asked my elders, is it okay to speak and to invite the ancestors in? And they're giving me the nod to go ahead. And right about now, I'd like to stop and thank the ancestors for joining me, for being a part of my life and being inspirational and supporting me and engaging in this room. And we know that Iwa Pele is required of us as African Americans, good character and good conduct. And as they give us the permission to go ahead, I begin to pour libations to my east, to my west, to my north, and to my south. And I say thank you for allowing me to be a part of the living today. I thank you for being allowing me to be a part of the living today because I can exercise my right in the natural vibration of energy. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about health education in this room. And we have been talking about motivating and promoting yoga in the classroom for the school teacher as well as the child. And as you know, the Friday was a celebration, just getting it off the ground to talk about what needs to happen in the classroom. Our topic for today is conscious-based education. And what is the purpose of education? Okay? Why do we need to go to the institutions? What is the purpose of education? And what are our kids really getting out of their education? We're going to be bringing that subject up, and we're going to be elaborating on conscious-based education from the perspective of Maharishi. Maharishi, who has his center out in Iowa, the state of Iowa, there is a university there as well as several schools throughout Iowa that practice conscious-based education. We do have a guest that is scheduled to come on this evening, and she is a longtime advocate and educator, and we'll be talking about conscious-based, African-American conscious-based education in the class. The benefits of it in the classroom, why it's necessary, why has it been avoided and left out of the curriculum, and the necessities to add it back in the curriculum. Now, when I say conscious-based education, ladies and gentlemen, I'm speaking of conscious-based information which is Afrocentric, as well as dealing with modalities such as yoga and meditation, the non-traditional methods that normally are not included in the curriculum. That is what I'm referring to. Now, I'd like to stop and take a station identification right now and pause, and I'll be right back at you in the air. And thank you for joining me once again and being a part of our discussion. We couldn't do this show without you. And I want you to understand that you're well accepted here in this room. And I'm going to let you hear the long version of I'll Be Brief.
I'll be brief. I won't hold you up like some kind of thief. I'll get straight to the point. In no time, I'll have you up out of this room. I'll be short. I won't keep you like you're in some jury court, waiting while debating which plaintiff case will prevail, or deciding which one will go to jail. Yeah, I'll hurry. You don't have to worry. I'm already fixing to get ready to. Before anyone hits the door, just remember, I still have the floor. I'm a poet, for those of you who don't know it, and it's been my real intention to show it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I thought that was my long version, but it was my short. I have a couple of corrections to make, ladies and gentlemen. As I was giving the lecture, I noted that I gave a couple of dates that need to be corrected. As I indicated, the years that I was over in Europe, I said 1979, but it was 1997. So I want to make a correction on that. And the ages of my uncles were 98 and 101. So just wanted to make that little correction on the conversation that we had previously. Once again, thank you for letting me airways. Thank you for being a part of our show today. I hope you're excited today. I hope you're full of energy and you're vibrating, because we're about to go into another day of celebration. Children are back in school now, and they're counting down those first 100 days. I'd like to say welcome back, students. Welcome back, kindergartners. You're my favorite. And those preschoolers, you know, you're the top. I'm giving you two thumbs up. Way to go, big boys and girls. Once again, welcome to those middle schoolers out there. Go to class. Don't linger around. And those high school students, it is your time now. You have got to rise to the occasion. Get involved in those pre-college program, college students. Get involved in those KIPP programs. Those KIPP programs where knowledge is power. You're going to be seeing Mrs. Garth around the airways and around the courtyard talking about knowledge is power and letting you know that it's very important that only said, let your light shine on the world. Let your light shine on the world. Let your light shine on the world. Omi said, let your light shine on the world. You know how I do it? I'm telling you to let your light shine on the world. You speak truth to power. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, speak truth to power while you're out there in those courtyards. Yes, I'm going to be looking out for you, because there's a special project that Project 2019 will be engaging in, collaborating with an organization to bring about training, development, and staff development for organizations and non-for-profit and educational institutes about incorporating a new 2.0 in the classroom and helping to assist. So you'll see my face around the place talking about technology and computers, not only by myself, but with my crew. I'll have my crew with me, and we'll be giving out a few tokens. I'm not so sure if we'll have our hats or our T-shirts, but we're going to be giving out something with Project 2019's name on it. Normally, we give out those baseball caps, or we'll have the T-shirts in different colors, but we'll be wearing that entourage as well. But we want to encourage young boys and girls that hopefully there'll be an opportunity for pep rallies where we can get you going talking about various different modalities and technologies in the classroom to make the teacher's life a little bit simpler. That's right. So you high school teachers, keep up the good work. And those postgraduate, those post-high school teachers and those junior colleges, I want to say hello to those adjuncts, those adjuncts in early childhood, and also in medical records. I want to say hello to you. I want to say keep going forward, especially include and those transitional special needs children into those college programs. Get them ready to go to college. Show them how they can go. There's even a program now to help them go abroad and to be able to engage in to internships and externships and fellowships. They're available for them, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to know that. As an educator, I will never stop being a teacher, even from my home, from wherever I have to extend my voice. So, once again, I'd like to also welcome the audience and give out that phone number. Our number is 646-478-0270. And this is the Care to Read Room, and I'd like to engage you today if you would care to read. Our segment for Care to Read today is a book by Zora Neale Hurston. Say that with me again, a little bit slower. Zora Neale Hurston, an African-American writer. And this is called A Journey to Freedom. The African-American Library is where it comes from. Oh, boys and girls, Zora Neale Hurston is one of my favorites. Oh, I can't begin to tell you all the skills this lady has. She is a writer, a performer, and one of the first authors, female authors, to make money off of writing, I would add. And she's also an African-American studier of the conscious Afrocentric. She, I understand, was studying her African culture and knows a little bit about Ifa and the traditional religion of Africa. She has spent many, many years writing books like, if you would go out and look for her books, I'm trying to think of a couple of things that she has put out for children in print. The Jewel Smith and Edison in Florida, where Zora was, she was raised in Florida, and some of her books that she writes about is African folk tales. And she's also done a lot of things about the Jim Crow laws and dealing with the white issue and the black issue in the South and separation, the water fountains that were segregated. She really was involved, ladies and gentlemen, in trying to break the color line and helping to change things. Zora Neale Hurston, upon graduation from Morgan Academy, this academy was part of Morgan College, a school for African people at that time. So she went to college. Mrs. Hurston moved to Memphis, Tennessee to live with her brother. Here she helped care for his children, but she longed to return to school. And she was also, Hurston was with friends at Howard University is where she went. She did well in school and classes, ladies and gentlemen. And she liked to she put forth a lot of effort in her writing. Okay, in 1918, Hurston moved to Washington, D.C. She worked as a waitress and as a manicurist in a black-owned barbershop for whites. In September, she began classes. As a child, Hurston had talked to the spirits of the trees in Evansville. She talked to the trees. Now she told the spirit of Howard University, you have taken me in, and I am a tiny bit of your greatness. And I swear to you that I shall never make you ashamed of me. Hurston got as in the course as she liked, and F's in physical education and other courses she didn't like. Herbert Sheen, also a student at Howard University, and Hurston met and fell in love. Oh, what do you know? For the first time since my mother's death, there was someone who fell really close and warm to me. She wrote, they remind me to become closer even after he left to attend medical school in Chicago. So eventually he did leave Miss Laura Nielsen. Hurston's teacher encouraged her to write. One of her stories won a contest in the Stylus at literary magazines at the university. The story John Redding Goes to Sea was based on the folktale that Hurston had read or had heard on Joe Clark's porch. It was published in the magazine with her poem, Oh Night. Charles Surgeon Johnson was the editor of the magazine called Opportunity, a journal of Negro life. He liked Hurston's story and asked her to write something for the magazine. So in 1924, she did. She went on to write, and she drenched it in light in the story, A Little Girl Swinging on a Gate in Front of Her House in Eddingsville, calling to a traveler who passed. Hurston used her memories of life in Eddingsville in many of the books and stories she wrote. In January 1925, Hurston went to New York to become a writer. She arrived with $1.15 and no job, no friends, and a lot of hope. In May, she won prizes in the contest held by the Opportunity magazine for her play, Color Struck, and her story stunk. More than 300 people from the literary world of New York attended the award dinner. That dinner changed Hurston's life. Now, she wrote the story Stunk and The Color Struck. So you might want to find those books that she's written. Okay? Now, here's a real story I wanted to get to. Love of Talk and Song. During the 1920s, black writers and artists from all over came to New York City. There was a great interest in the writing, art, music, and dance of African Americans in Harlem, a black selection of the city. Because the largest African American neighborhood in the United States, many white people attended plays, concerts, readings in Harlem. Some even gave money to black artists to help them to get started. That period in history is known as the Harlem Renaissance. Can you say that, ladies and gentlemen? The Harlem Renaissance. Do you remember that period in air and time with the Sleepy Park Hollow as well? And the unions were igniting during that time, and jobs were plentiful all over the place for writers and actors and actresses. One of the judges of the Opportunity Contest was Fanny Hurston, a best-selling white writer. She liked Hurston and she hired her as a live-in secretary. Soon, the novelist discovered that Hurston could not type very well. So Fanny hired Hurston to drive her around New York and keep her company as a companion instead. Fanny Hurston, a best-selling author who hired Hurston to be secretary, before long, it became Hurston's job to drive her around, as I said. Now, Hurston also met Annie Nate Meyer at the Howard Awards Dinner. Meyer had helped found Barnard College, the Women's College of Columbia University in New York City. She helped Hurston to get a full scholarship to attend the college. When Hurston began classes in 1925, she was the only African American student in Barnard. Hurston was popular at school and also in the neighborhood. Many writers, authors, and musicians met her in Harlem apartment, and she became friends with Langston Hughes, also Cudley, and important young writers. And the Harlem Renaissance, Hurston was a wonderful storyteller. She could make you laugh in minutes and cry the next. wrote Langston Hughes. She always loved being in the center of attention. Okay. In the summer of 1926, Hurston and five of her friends, including Hurston, started a magazine called Fire. They wanted to give an African-American writer a chance to express their writing. Fire was their true feeling and ideas. Most copies of this issues were destroyed by real fire. The group could not repay the money they owed and never printed another issue. In September, Hurston published the first part of the Eddingsville anthology. These stories retold the jokes and the tales that she had heard on the front porch of Joe Clark's store. They were the kind of stories Hurston loved to tell her friends at her parties in Harlem. In her first year of Barnard, Hurston discovered a science called anthology. Anthology is the study of human beings and their culture. And one of their teachers, Dr. Franz Boas, encouraged Hurston to study folklore. Folklore includes the stories, customs, beliefs, and dances, and music that people share and pass down to their children. That's a folklore, yet, ladies and gentlemen. Hurston loved this new subject. She worked closely with Dr. Boas, whom she called Papa Fred. She began to think about the lying sessions on Joe Clark's front porch in a new way. They were part of her childhood, but now she saw that they had a special importance. They were part of the folklore of Edenville and black people of the South. In February 1927, Hurston boarded a train to Florida. She was going to gather folk tales in a small country town in Florida. Her first stop was Evansville. Hurston borrowed money to buy an old car. She named the car Sassy Susie. When Hurston arrived in Eddingsville, the people on the porch of Joe Clark's store had the same love of talk and song, she remembered. But Hurston was no longer a young girl eager to hear stories. She was a student from a big university in New York, and she acted like one, too. Her words and actions kept Hurston apart from the people she wanted to talk to instead of bringing her closer. She did not collect many stories. Oh, I've got a few little items, she wrote, but not enough to make a sleeve whistle jacket, which certainly isn't many at all. Hurston met up with her friend, Hurston Sheen, in St. Augustine, Florida. They were married on May 19, 1927. Hurston wanted to keep working, but her new husband did not approve. They soon decided that they could not stay together. Herbert returned to medical school. They could not afford a divorce until 4 years later, but they remained close friends for many more years. After Herbert left, Hurston went to Mobile, Alabama, to interview a man named Colosolo Away Lewis. He was the last survivor of the last ship that brought African slaves to the United States. Lewis was 80 years old. Nobody knows why, but Hurston copied part of someone else's article about him and turned the work as her own. No one discovered what Hurston had done until many years later. Hurston also visited her brother Bob and Ben in Memphis, Tennessee. Then she met her friend Langston Hughes. He had never been to the South before. On the way back to New York, they stopped in Tuskegee, Alabama, to visit the grave of Booker T. Washington. They also stopped in Malcolm, Georgia, to hear Bessie Smith and the famous blues singers. And the two writers drove Sassy Sue north along the Black Road of South, collecting folktales along the way. Looks like love was paying off for her. Finally, the genius of the South. As soon as Hurston met Charlotte Mason, she felt they had a strange, strong bond. Hurston believed that she had once met Charlotte Mason in a dream. She even believed that they could read each other's mind from thousands of miles away. Mrs. Mason was a rich white woman. She gave money to many black artists and writers, including Hurston, friend Langston Hughes, and Alan Locke, and editors of the New Negro Collection of Poetry. Mason wanted to pay Hurston to collect African-American folklore for her. She asked Hurston to call her grandmother. In 1928, Hurston became the first African-American woman to graduate from Barnard College. After graduation, she traveled to the South to collect folklore for Mrs. Mason. Godmother promised to pay Hurston $200, but Hurston could not tell anyone else what she found on her trip. During the travel, Hurston visited a Lambert camp of Polk County, Florida. The men there had many folk stories and sayings. They sang songs and sung their axes to the rhythm. This time, Hurston tried to fit in, but the people did not trust her. Luckily, she made friends with Big Sweet. Big Sweet made people tell Hurston their best stories. She also set up lying contests, which she judged herself. Lying contests. Once the men in camp had girlfriends who were jealous of Hurston. One night, she attacked Hurston with a knife. Big Sweet told Hurston to run for her life. When the sun was up, Hurston wrote, "I was 100 miles up the road, headed for that New Orleans, the New Orleans, Louisiana." Hurston learned about the hoodoo. The hoodoo. The hoodoo is a type of magic based on African belief. She studied with a hoodoo expert to learn the secret practice. Hurston later wrote about hoodoo in her book, Mules and Men, which was published in 1935. When Hurston returned from New Orleans, she and Langston Hughes began writing a play called Mule Bone. It was based on one of Hurston's folk tales and had music and dance. The writers began to argue about who should get the credit for writing. They never produced the play, and their long friendship ended. Hurston wrote another show called The Great Day. It was about a typical day in Florida, railroads and camps, including work songs and sermons, and Jew joint song, a black music club, later Houston, Hurston called the folks' name from sun to sun, when she performed it for steel workers in Chicago. She called it Singing Steel. Singing Steel. Now, that's right here in my neighborhood. This is a steel mill county right here in Gary, Indiana. So she was somewhere nearby talking about singing about the steel mill. The show was a success, but it did not earn much money. Hurston had stopped working for Charlotte Nation, and now she needed money. She published the Gideon 6-Bit in Story magazine. A book publisher named Bernard Lipcott liked the story, asked Hurston if she was writing a novel. Hurston told him that she surely was, and then she started writing one. 1 month later, she finished Joshua Gordvine, a novel based on her parents' life. Hurston was trying to shoe in a store where she opened the publisher's Telegram. Okay. Lipton also published Mules and Men, the first book of African-American folktale ever written by an African-American. It contained 70 folktales, such as How the Cat Got 9 Lives and How the Snake Got Poisoned. It also included songs, music, children's games, and 7 chapters of voodoo. She was really, really into her heritage. Now, let me stop and say something about the word hoodoo, because you're probably wondering, what is hoodoo? And is that like voodoo? Hoodoo was really a topic that was discussed, ladies and gentlemen, that was to take a spell off of a person, not to put a spell on. The hoodoo person had the ability to determine if a spell was on and to assist you and to help aid you. Now, if Zora Neale wrote about this, apparently she believed in ancestors. She spoke very heavily about the fact that when problems came, she would go to the graveyard to summon her ancestors to come and go with her to take care of a matter, to assist her and aid her. At one point, she went to go get her sister, who was deceased, to go along with her other living sisters to help them in a situation. Now, Zora Neale had a very, very bright, glamorous life, it would look to a scene, but she went through some prejudice, and she realized that the African connection and protection would have been in her understanding her hoodoo roots. And she probably ventured off into this because there was unsafe places she had to travel, and she needed something called protection. In many, many olden days, the Africans, they would actually prepare the juju bags to take with you on a voyage or a journey for protection, because we were always up against opposition. Now, who would not say that the Africans could not travel? They could not be caught anywhere without a pass. They could not be caught on the road after dark. And they had to definitely have a job. And they, if they were caught without money in their pocket or a job or had a mission, then they were taken to jail or possibly even hung or lynched. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell it like it is. Or lynched. Their lives were on the line. So they found the need to venture out to have protection. And hoodoo was their protection at that time. Let's just make it plain. For you African-Americans who might be shaking your head, I'm saying the difference with you. It is what the mothers gave the children to protect them on their journey. And for you Caucasian that might say, oh, that's juju, that's voodoo. You will probably say some of your mothers and fathers knew about the time when these people were stopped on the highways and byways and they were violated. Now, how many times can you be violated before you reach out for sanctuary? Hoodoo became a sanctuary for these people. It was real. It wasn't some black magic. It wasn't something to hurt other people. It was something to protect themselves. Now, this juju bag, I'm very familiar with, and you are too if you've seen the Daughters of the Dust, because right before Nana Pérez released her family to go away to the north, she prepared a hoodoo bag. If you don't believe me, rent the movie, The Daughters of the Dust. It's plain as day. Take a little piece of myself with you, children, I say. Don't go across those waters by yourself. Remember old Nana Pérez, and she told you that she's giving you a piece of herself. Nana Pérez was giving a piece of herself to her children for protection so they would never be separated from her, a piece of her hair and possibly a button and possibly things that were close to her. She put those in a bag to give to these journeyers who were going across the ocean and told them that no matter how far they got, that they would always have the peace of the ancestors abiding with them. She spent a large, great portion of her time in the graveyards speaking to the ancestors, talking to them, asking them to give them direction and life and guidance for their life. What are you talking about, Omi? We don't need that stuff for this time. We don't need that right now. We got protection. We go in the courtroom with lawyers, and we get vindicated. What are you talking about, Omi? We don't need that. We go in and we get all the help from the doctors we want. What I'm talking about is getting back to your old self, getting back to your old roots, understanding that these things meant something. When they were taken away, they were not understood. They were demonized. They were called out as being witchcraft and demonized, never studied, to the point of breaking down the concept of the tradition, never explored to the point of college professors examining them, not until now. Let me let you in on a little tip, ladies and gentlemen. These things are now being studied by college professors thoroughly, I might add, and they're being investigated and utilized. Yes, they are. If anybody begs the difference with me, check the major universities. The professors know more so about hoodoo, voodoo, and about the African traditions. Yes, they do. Now, if you would care to engage in a scholarly discussion, we are going to have a segment in one of our V rooms where we'll be discussing Spiritual Lifeline, and we're going to do a whole series on Zora Neale Hurston. And we're going to explore the life of her and some of her journey and what she went through. Now, she was a very sophisticated young lady. As you see, she did not fit in with her own kind because of her speech and the way she articulates. And I know the feeling, because when you express yourself well, they tend to say she's acting white. Acting white does not necessitate you speaking with good diction and articulating. It means you are intelligent and you are communicating on higher planes. You're using the king's language. Now, nevertheless, we're going to explore Zora Neale Hurston, and we're going to find out more about her stories and plays that she has written about the hoodoo and how did it fit into the African tradition of African religion. Now, as I told you, the professors are busy right now as I speak exploring, dissecting, and connecting with this religion. As you know, every time I come in this room, I call on the ancestors because I've learned something more that almost shattered me to the point of wanting to believe even more so than what I have in the past. I found out from Professor Johnson that because melanin in the African American body can duplicate itself, and there is no other molecule that can do that except for DNA, that this molecule has the capability of performing like a DNA product. It has the capability of reproducing itself, and it does not dissipate when one dies, meaning going into the atmosphere. It stays around. So if other Africans are around who have melanin and would like to tap into that melanin that is still in the atmosphere, there is a capability for your ancestors to allow you to tap into that melanin, to broaden your melanin, enrich your intelligence, strengthen your body, accelerate your spirituality, and at the same time, stay connected to that melanin. People, as I told you, melanin is just not some byproduct that produces your skin tone. It is something now that they're finding that will help eradicate the aging, rejuvenate the body, and now they're looking at, can melanin create intelligence in the mind? Because there's such a heavy concentration in the medulla oblongata and also in the sex glands. And it's also now being manufactured for melatonin, something that will allow you to sleep easy. They've been using it topically for many, many years, but now they're exploring the intelligent level of melatonin. And when our ancestors die and transition on to the next life, their melanin is left back here for us, ladies and gentlemen. We can tap into that melanin, but you have to call on your ancestors to do that. Now, aren't you glad that I've been calling on the ancestors in this room, asking them to endow me, asking them to empower spirit here and give me a bit of their ashe, just like Elijah and Elijah when he left and went into the whirlwind. He said, what can I do for you when you leave? What can I do for you? He said, leave a bit of your spirit behind for me. Now, I'm asking the ancestors to leave a bit of their spirit behind for me so I can tap into that melanin. Oh, glory be to God. We're able to manifest and call on those forces to be for protection. See, because so many Africans were molested in their time, not only castrated and hung up and mutilated, but they could not be found on the road without protection. Now, it's almost gotten to that point now, ladies and gentlemen. It's almost gotten to that point now. Believe it or not, there are plans everywhere, everywhere. Now, we got to look at education. Let me take a moment here, because we said we were going to talk about conscious-based education. What is the purpose of education? Why is it needed? And why are we now finding out we need conscious-based education? I'm going to take a station identification. I have said a mouthful, and I just want to slow it down just a little bit, and I want you to meditate on the word here for me. Let me see if I can give you something new. Oh, say, can you see?
Oh, say, can you see? Read by the author, Omiika Bidiako Garth. Oh, say, can you see? The Statue of Liberty waving at me. America, the beautiful she once used to be, shedding her light ever so bright, even in through dawn's early night. Now my future doesn't look so bright. Oh, say, can you see? The Statue of Liberty, is she waving at me? With her once opening doors where they were once closed, and rearranging the positions we hold. Now with the people free, they can get up. They can get up off their knees to stand equal beside every man with pride. Oh, say, can you see? Is the Statue of Liberty, is she waving her hand at me? You said education was the key, and that you wanted all men to be free. Once receiving the higher knowledge, now after I've obtained the college, affirmative action would now be abolished. Is there no place for me left here in society? Oh, say, can you see? Is the Statue of Liberty, is she waving her hand at me? While looking back in retrospective, it seems that you have now neglected to look at your reflection to see if you have waved in my direction. Is this one soul that will never be saved? All because you forgot to wave. Oh, say, can you see? Oh, say, can you see?
Oh, say, can you see, ladies and gentlemen? I wrote that poem when I was trying to make some sense out of whether or not African Americans were now going to rely on the system to help bring them into the scheme of things, or were they going to get their education. And because African Americans know that we believe that knowledge is power, and the way you empower yourself is through getting education, and then those laws and regulations where they have to use integration and giving the 1% and making sure African Americans are given the right to come into jobs. If you have education, you no longer have to wait for those laws to be reactivated. The education normally reads, those without degrees need not apply. And that's where the discrimination can come in at. But if you are properly degreed, you can get over the grain house, ladies and gentlemen. And therefore, that is what I'm trying to tell you, that education, we have to speak truth into our lives with education, because we know that truth is spoken into power and knowledge is power. And as you begin to get these credentials, I know it takes a lot of money and a lot of time, but statistics show that once you are empowered with credentials, higher level academians, you have a better chance of earning more dollars and cents. And I know that, ladies and gentlemen, I do. And at one time I thought it was necessary to go and get that PhD. But I decided that I was going to invest in me and make myself an institution and save those dollars and cents and let my two sons go on and get their credentials and help them along the way and go and make myself an institution and bring them in up under me so we could work together as an institution. But getting credentials, sometimes when you get a master's already and you think you have to kill yourself to get a PhD, it's not always necessary. You can make that decision overnight, ladies and gentlemen. You don't have to strangle yourself to make that decision, and even with a master's degree. However, but I will say this much, when you get that degree, you still have to market yourself. You have to be a household name. Is Omi a household name right now? Has Omi made it? I would like to believe that I am a household name, and I would like to believe that I'm capable of going to get any job that's available to me because of my credentials and the fact that I can't articulate and express myself. I'm telling you the same thing. that if there's a job you want out there, then you need only do one thing, get the credentials that's required and necessary for that position, and learn to articulate and express yourself well in written form and in verbal form, and go after the jobs that you want. But we certainly are not going to wait for these regulations that comes in the laws that tells us we got to hire so many blacks to put you in a position, and then you feel like somebody obligated you because they are meeting a quota. And African Americans, I want to tell you, Project 2019 doesn't believe that. We believe that if you give us a chance to lift up ourselves, we can. We don't want handouts. We don't want you to make room for us because you're meeting the quota. We want you to give us a chance to come in, to strive and compete with every other nation of people based on our own intelligence and not because you have to meet a quota. Now, let me go on. Our topic today is conscious-based education. I'd like to read you something from one of the experts that I feel is a conscious-based person. The Maharishi University of Management has a summary of scientific research on conscious-based education. And I said that where I would like to talk about them first, and then I'm going to insert information from the African perspective, because it would be a shame for me to sit here, tell you about some other customs and traditions, and try to usurp that into the African family life in the urban setting, acting like it doesn't make a difference. Oh, it doesn't make a difference. It's okay. They're all the same on the inside. That's not true. We're finding out we're not all the same on the inside. And a bit of medicine to one race of people may be a bit of poison to the other. As a matter of fact, we as Africans may be based on an alkaline basis for requiring medicine, where the European may require an acid base. Two separate things, ladies and gentlemen. And we've got to stop people from saying we're all alike and we need the same thing. Not true. We're not all alike. And sometimes what may empower you may inflate me to degrade me. So let's talk about it. I'm going to talk about the conscious-based education coming from a Euro perspective, and then I'm going to talk about one coming from an African perspective. Now, pardon me as I go on. I was talking to you about the summary of the scientific research on conscious-based education. Let me read you the content. Conscious research is what I want to say. Scientific research findings the development of all aspects of life. Scientific research findings relevant to the unfolding of the student's potential with numbered references to the original scientific. Now, let me go into what they say it is, okay? The conscious-based education program fulfills fundamental needs in this scientifically documented program founded by Maharishi Yogi and applied for over four decades worldwide fulfills the fundamental needs and American education. It provides a systematic way to holistically develop all students. All students? Okay. Then why are African Americans failing so much? Okay. In perspective of their background, so that they grow in ideal citizenship, in a fulfillment, reliable, practical ways to eliminate stress, reliable, practical ways to improve any school's atmosphere, creating an increasingly happy, focused, orderly learning environment. Central components of the conscious-based education program, the Transcendental Meditation Program. The Transcendental Meditation Program is a sample, a natural, effortless technique, practiced 15 to 20 minutes twice daily, sitting comfortably, with eyes closed, this technique settings in the mind and body to a unique state of resentful alertness, allowing the mind to naturally experience the level of its own full potential, transcendental consciousness. Research verifies that the experience of transcendental consciousness is uniquely, effectively, and activating latent reverse of the brain. With regular practice of the transcendental meditation, the immense creativity and intellectual intelligence enhanced every individual increasingly express itself in thoughts and action. When the majority of the students and teachers in a school practice the transcendental meditation techniques, the entire school atmosphere changes dramatically, and the school becomes a center of harmony and peace for the whole neighborhood and the community. Then what is going on in our communities with all this chaos? What is happening with all the fighting and the shooting and the abuse and the lock-ins in our African communities in the urban setting? Are we doing something wrong? Are we missing out on something? Maybe a conscious-based education, ladies and gentlemen. Let me go on. Easily implemented in the school, the conscious-based education program is easily implemented in any school. It has two components: twice daily practice of the transcendental meditation program, a course of study taught once or twice per week, which presents universal principles, natural laws that are found common to all areas of study and to the student's life as their creative potential develops. This integral study makes learning any subject more relevant, holistic, and fulfilling for the student. Extensive scientific research has gone on, ladies and gentlemen. Over 600 scientific research studies have documented that the benefits of transcendental meditation and advanced TM. Okay? This research conducted at more than 200 universities and research institutes, 30 countries, confirmed the universal and found and the profound effectiveness of the program in raising the quality of life. Raising the quality of life. That is what education is supposed to do. I ask the question, what is education supposed to do? What is the purpose of it? To raise the quality and the consciousness of life so that the child goes home being well-rounded and qualifying him to be a proven human being, to sit in a community and give something back. This brochure summarizes and reports on the research studies related to education and cities, outstanding education achievement of students, and schools that use a conscious-based education program. Now, they have documentation of these schools all over in Iowa. The fundamental scientific principles, the quantum physics, have identified the field of transcendental meditation experience doing the transcendental meditation technique as the unified field of natural law, which thought itself to be the interacting dynamic, gives rise to all forces and phenomena governing the orderly evolving of the universe. Viewed from the perspective, the transcendental meditation technique is a means for the mind to twice daily identify itself with the fundamental fields of the nature, intelligence, which is one's own total intelligence, and thereby entrusting the ultimate creative potential of the field into practical life. Practical life. That's a part of family and consumer life. We offer practical life, showing you how to live, showing you what is necessary to be balanced in all of your affairs. Certainly we don't want our children going to school become unraveled and become disorderly and uneducated. From the psychological perspective of neuroscientific, Professor Tony Nader, he's an MD, under the guidance of Maharishi Yogi, made the profound discovery that the dynamical structure of natural law within the unified field positively corresponds to the fundamental structure and the function of the human psychological. Therefore, by in living one's inner intelligence, the transcendental meditation technique stimulates more complete intelligence and functioning of all the laws of nature, governing body, producing a healthier, more integrated, and balanced individual. Producing a more integrated, healthy, and balanced individual is a core reason for education, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I want to stop there and take a breath I had the digestis. I am so pleased that Maharishi, the yogi, has found out what is best to help people in general and students in particular to become a healthy, integrated, and balanced individual. Unfortunately, we have come away from our laws, such as the juju bag, the hoodoo, the voodoo. We've come away from that because it's supposed to be old-fashioned and unacceptable for the African-Americans. We've come so far away from we don't know what is necessary to make us whole again. We've forgotten about the African-centered folk tales, the African-centered, African-centristic infusion back in the classroom. I would like to say that Gary Indiana had a bit of the truth at first. They knew the benefit of having African-centered education in schools would make great schools. And you might not know a lot about Gary's curriculum. You might not know a lot about Gary's school districts at all. But just to inform you, at one time there were great, great schools with great curriculum that were examined by curriculum specialists all over the world and sought after because they made the effort to put infusion in the curriculum to teach about African-centered education. They even brought in a great professor to set up a whole program of literature that would infuse African-centristic materials back into the classroom. They started on that path, but they got a little confused, and they thought that Africans could not possibly be the solution to solving their education problem or their test score problem. So they let it go along the wayside, and they stopped the professor from going on with his seven-year study to bring about the African infusion of curriculums. But I got there just in time before they dropped the hammer on the people and told them they were not going to implement the curriculum. I graduated from the Gary Community Schools, and during the time I came through, there was great literature and great books to read. I had a great education. Gave me a love for books, gave me a love for understanding and reasoning and for science to become a researcher and get involved in my biological science courses. And every course I took in science, I mastered it and did well because I had a love for science. And because of Gary Community Schools, they put that there. Now, when I got to Gary Community Schools and coming back from my tour overseas and being placed in the social studies department, which is what my assignment was, I noticed that there were books everywhere from infusion, and the librarian was busy trying to bring the books back in. But as fast as she would bring them back in, they would take them out of the institution. But there was one book called The African American Literature that they wanted to keep there, and I urged them to keep that book there. We're going to do a synopsis of that book, meaning we're going to have a study group, and we're going to go into deep information about that. But African-centristic education is necessary in the lives of our black children. African consciousness of who they are, Egyptology, the ancient Greeks, not only the ancient Greeks, the African-centeredness. Because, see, there is no Greek philosophy without African-centered philosophy. The Africans brought reason. However, there was a great debate over whether or not Greeks were the one who brought reason. And we're going to be able to go over that a little bit further and go into depth. I wanted to give you a well-rounded base of conscious-based education today to show you how this can be incorporated into our lives. But we all have to come together, ladies and gentlemen. We all have to come together and have to realize that as we come out of the valley, as we come out of the valley, the only way we're going to have success, we must tell truth and incorporate consciousness and conscious-based African education back into the classroom. And as a curriculum specialist, I aim to help some of the teachers to examine what is best for the classroom, for the children. But we bring all races of people together to come to the table. I invite you all, Jewish people who are at the head of education, who are infusing everything you can think of about Holocaust, now infuse something about the Maya, where we went through the annals of the history page and we came through the slave ship. Infuse that back and incorporate Holocaust with the Maya together. And let us tell a story together. And Europeans, let us go back to the inception of what happened in coming to the United States to bring truth together. And and we can meet this thing with excellence with all of the knowledge we have. And let's have a success story and come together as one. I'd like to thank you for joining us here in the Care to Read room at 646-478-0270. We will bring our guest on next time. She probably didn't make it in time from her flight, but I still like to acknowledge her, Joy White. We love you out there, and I hope you're on your way, and we'll talk to you soon. Let us go on to talk about the success story of what we could do together as one nation under a roof. And remember, Omi said, let your light shine on the world. Let your light shine on the world as we have a success story.
We can live in harmony.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, together we can do it. Yes, we can. Thank you for going all the way with me on this journey to talk about African conscious education. And we're going to be talking more about African conscious education. However, tomorrow is our seventh segment that we'll be talking about. We'll be focusing in on the topic of what are the children obtaining from their education is one of the things we talk about today. In our classroom. And I'd like to say one thing to you is that the conscious-based education is a missing link to our failing schools and the relationship. We're going to talk a little bit more about that tomorrow, but we have another topic for you. We're going to try to get more into detail about the African-centered education. And as I told you, Zora Neale Hurston is going to be one of our focus points. We're going to be talking about a little bit about Langston Hughes and a little bit about Gwen Brooks and telling a little bit about their backgrounds and what they did. And you'll be able to go to our Spiritual Lifeline Connection Room up under the issue topic. And that room, we will be breaking down opportunities for people to come into the chat room to further discuss in detail about the African literature and experience of the Renaissance. So that we can get into understanding a little bit what happened during that time in the reconstruction of the Renaissance, so that people can get a better understanding of how great our literature is. But for those of you who need that help out there in writing and expressing yourself, this will be your opportunity to sharpen up your skills in reading and writing. I mean, I won't require you to turn your work in. We'll have it for discussion, and it'll be more like a discussion group. But you will get a chance to venture back over some of those topics of the African literature experience. And as I told you, the conscious-based education will always include the meditation, and also the yoga in the classroom is recommended. But for African Americans, I've done the approach of African American curriculum. It's the dark approach, and that approach is to include conscious-based transcendental meditation in with African-centeredness, as well as understanding the spirit of the child that comes from Montessori. So it's a combination of three different types of methodology to address for African-centered schools. Hopefully, as I begin to work with people at my Jumpstart website, you can go there and see that I'm just starting to put that website up for the conscious-based education, dealing with the GART approach, which is conscious-based spirituality. The spirituality is a great part in the Montessori, ladies and gentlemen, where she focused in on spirit of the child. And no one has ever focused on the spirit of the child in the public schools. I thought it was necessary because a child's spirit is so important that it stays intact, that this will be the main focus of my curriculum, is the spirit of the child, to let the child lead you based on their spirit, and to also feed the spirit and endow the spirit, because we can't teach anything, ladies and gentlemen. We can't put anything in a child. All we're doing is adducing, what's already in the child. We're pulling out what's already there. We help to harness that child's spirit so that child develops in his spirit and he increases in his spirit and increases in spiritual knowledge. Now, that is very important in my curriculum, where we also use the meditation to get a better acquainted with understanding that we function from both sides of the brain, right and left. Now that we know a little something about melanin and how it operates differently in all of us, and our bodies can reproduce melanin, and how our bodies are a mean, bad function machine because of the melanin in our body. Don't let anybody tell you that because you're black that you got to get back. You tell them that you are made from a great substance of melanin, which makes you an enriched black person. And tell them that there's no shame in your game of being blacker than black or blacker than night, because it makes you healthier. And so now you got something to feel good about. Lift yourself up today. Unite with somebody. Don't try to fade over to their color. It's a greatness in variety. Be yourself. As I always tell you, be yourself. And I tell you, thank you for letting me be myself again today. I'm black and I'm proud. And I don't have to worry about somebody say, if you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. If you're white, you're all right. Remember we had to go through that kind of stuff? We're going to set the limit in this room that black is black. And it's okay to be black. And it's okay to have white friends, Jewish friends, Caucasian friends, European friends, Asian friends. It's okay. We all have a purpose. Nobody has precedence over the other race. Nobody. And remember, Omi told you that. We're all equal in God's sight. God chose one race. There's only but one human race. Please know this, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get into some DNA of how the races were made, who created the races, and how were they made, and what is the generic race, and what is the prominent DNA. We're going to get into some of that. Yes, and you're going to be raveled, and you're going to be upset when you find out who you came from and what you're a part of and how you are the lesser inferior with non-melanite. You're going to be very upset by that, but it will be factual. It won't be coming from Omi. So you'll get a chance to see how races were made and the benefit and the beauty of all of us coming together. And stay tuned for tomorrow. Join us tomorrow. Come on back and be with Omi, okay? Remember, Omi said, let your light shine on the world. What did Omi say? Let your light shine on the world. See you tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Be with us tomorrow, same time, 6 o'clock here in this room, the Care to Read room, 646-478-0270. And we want to give 3 shouts out, put our hands up in the air to Harambe, our neighboring radio station. Harambe. 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 Odabo, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great evening.